What is going on, everybody? This is Party Card Sports back for the last
words.
Last show before the NFL draft.
Yeah. By the time we're recording next week, the first round will be all the way done. And depending on when we start recording, the second round will be kind of partly through. I don't know exactly when the second round is supposed to kick off. I don't know if it's supposed to start like at 4 or 5. But we usually record around 7, so it'll definitely be started by then. So we might be giving some live updates next week. But for sure, next week we'll have the first round results, and we'll be able to talk about that. And we will get into a little draft talk towards the end of this episode. But it's getting down to it, and teams are finally, you know, kind of finalizing their draft boards. And we're going to see by the end of this next weekend, you know, what these rosters are going to look like going into the preseason. And you know, for the most part, we can look at the 52-man roster and know who's going to make the roster. For the most part.
For sure.
For the key players that are going to make up your starting 11 on offense, your starting 11 on defense. But before we get into that, there's a whole slew of dog shit we got to fucking unpile before we can even talk about football, period. Let's start with the Masters. We mentioned it last weekend. It was already kind of underway. Your boy Tiger, Cody, did not pan out for you, as I said that he would not.
He got hurt. He made the cut. You know what? He made the cut.
And that's about it.
He made the cut. He was last after the cut, but he made the cut.
So you said that after the cut, round 3, Saturday, he was going to be in the top 10. That was a Cody guarantee.
He wasn't doing too bad either. listen. He had a bogey. Then he had a birdie in 6. I'm thinking, all right, just keep it right in this area. We'll attack the back 9. Well, then on 7, he kind of winced a little bit off his drive. And I was like, uh-oh.
So I was helping my dad resod his yard Saturday. I just happened to pull up the scores. Homeboy was like 6 big through 10 holes.
Yeah, well.
And I was like, yeah. He ain't going to finish in the top 10.
Let me break it down for you. Hole 6, birdie. Hole 7, when I said he winced a little bit, double bogey. Hole 8, double bogey. Yeah. Hole 9, I don't know if he got another bogey or if it was another double bogey, but he was hurting. After hole 9, I didn't text you, but I texted our other buddy, Dugan, and he's like, you still doubling down on Tiger? And I texted him back and I said, I don't think Tiger's finishing the tournament. Because at that point, I really thought Tiger was done. He finished out, ended up playing the fourth round too, but he did not do well in the fourth round either.
No. I mean, he did worse in the third.
Well, yeah, he was like plus 10 on day 3 and only plus 5 on
on the final day. Yeah. But yeah, there's memes going around. For those that don't know, Scottie Scheffler won, obviously. Best player in the game right now. But there was the meme going around.
Most consistent player in the game right now.
Yeah. There was the meme going around that from Happy Gilmore, where they're asking Shooter McGavin if he got a chance to watch Happy Gilmore. It was like talking to Scottie Scheffler. Hey, did you get a chance to see Tiger play today? No, I was too busy winning. what'd he come, dead last? And that's exactly what happened. So that was kind of funny. But yes, Scottie Scheffler, we kind of talked about it last week when Bryson DeChambeau was in there. We talked about, you know, DeChambeau probably not being able to play 4 rounds because he's not used to playing 4 rounds anymore with LIV Golf.
Blew up in the third.
Yeah, dude, he played like absolute dog shit in the third and then didn't really better himself in the last round. But Scottie Scheffler, after the third round, he was on coast. I mean,
he didn't have, he was negative 7 after the third day. So everybody pretty much had to come get him, and no one was even close.
Yeah, I mean, what he win by, 4 strokes? Yeah, 4 strokes. Yeah. I mean, Hama fell off, Bryson DeChambeau fell off, and those were the guys that were supposed to be challenging him, and once those two fell off, he was like, ah, fuck yeah, I don't have to do shit.
Let me ask you something.
Just not fuck up.
So we're negative 11, right, mm-hmm. is the final score for this year's Masters.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
If I told you everyone in the field had to play from, you know, the tips or whatever, like they have to.
Okay.
But you specifically get to start on the furthest point
of the green.
Of the green.
I heard this.
And you have to play from there. Could you have won the Masters?
Oh, fuck yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm not that bad at putting. I can, from the furthest part of the green, the par threes would be the worst.
Yeah, that's where you lose strokes.
Basically, you're just three putting, or hope that you three putt and get your par. But I can three putt on a par four and be just fine.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I could definitely do that.
And who's to know, you get one miraculous. Now, here's the thing. The last round, fucking a PGA Tour player breathing down your neck, the whole crowd, maybe you
would. I would have so many strokes on 11, it wouldn't even matter. Like I said, I'm not that good at putting, but I sure as fuck not that bad at putting. I'm going to three or four putt, you know, all the damn time. I mean, now, some of these greens are pretty freaking long where they're 120 footers. But then you just get, it's just a speed lag putt. And you don't even have to get all the way to the hole. You just got to get it almost to the hole, and then you can lag putt again and still tap in for a birdie.
We're talking about where some par fives, oh, it took me three shots to get in the hole. Cool, I still got two.
I got eagle.
I got two fucking shots. Yeah, I saw that, and I was like, I think I could. And people were like, oh, those greens are so much harder than you think. And I'm like,
oh, they probably are.
They probably are. You don't have to be very good. You only have to be somewhat good on the par threes. And even if you lose one on a par three, get it back on a par five, par four.
Yeah. I think I could definitely do that, for sure. But now, if they started me off at 40 yards and I had to get onto the green, yeah, no, I'm fucking that up all day. I have gotten better at my 40-yard pitch shots, but I'd still fuck that up.
You start in the sand traps on every hole.
I'm fucked. I'm down there with Tiger. I'm way down there with Tiger.
You start in one, and then you accidentally hit to the other one.
To the other one, yeah. Fucking scold it, ramp off the lip, and then all the way across the green and roll down to the other one. Yeah, that would be me. Granted, the last time I played a couple weeks ago, I was 4 for 5 getting out of bunkers and staying on the green in one shot. So I was kind of happy about that. But so Scottie Scheffler won, you know, like we said, one of the best players right now. But here's an interesting article about the Masters. The final round was viewership was down 20%.
Yeah, because they knew Tiger was out of it.
But opening round was 26% higher than the previous year
because
the first round.
Because Tiger was still in it, baby. That's the Tiger effect.
Well, they're saying it has something to do with the PGA Tour and LIV Golf relationship. That's why viewership was down after the cut, basically. That's what this article is saying. That's what Rory McIlroy is insinuating, is that the relationship between LIV Golf and the PGA Tour is what has caused that 20% drop.
I bet you there's a correlation that shows the moment that Tiger was like pretty much out of it, that showed the viewership going,
I don't think so. Dude, Tiger's been so irrelevant. I'm sorry.
He had bigger freaking crowds than freaking Scheffler did.
Well, people just want to watch Tiger.
Yeah.
It's not
even, that's what I'm saying.
They don't want, you act like they could have just still, they could still watch Tiger now after he's done. Yeah. Then the viewership goes down. Sure.
That's,
but they're talking about total viewership of the last two rounds was down.
Yeah, because Tiger was down of it.
No, you can still watch Tiger, okay? It's not like he's not playing.
Yeah, but people know, like, oh, damn, he didn't.
So you're not gonna make it. You're not gonna watch your favorite player not play just because he's not in contention for a win? Wrong. You're still gonna watch your favorite player play.
I didn't watch him play the fourth round.
I didn't watch much of the fourth round. I watched quite a bit of the third.
I watched Scheffler. I think.
What once I saw,
think he was still on the 15th hole and he had it. Pretty much, there was no way anybody could catch him. I was like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. Once I saw the scores really going into the last round, I kind of watched a little bit. And then, once Sheffy just basically got a big enough lead, I was like, yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Shambo's in shambles. He can't hit a fucking putt. Homa fell off. Yeah, I'm not gonna.
I don't know how to say this guy's name, but the guy from Sweden.
Oh yeah,
Abberg. I think he was on the 17th hole, and he like just made a par, and they're like, and then he was four strokes out of it, and I'm like, oh, Scheffler has to coast to the end. Yep, okay,
just not like I said, just not fuck up. But I think we've spent enough time on the Masters. Congratulations, Scotty. You know
what do you mean though? Before you moving on, what do you mean by like, oh, the relationship between Liv and PGA is bad, so the viewership's bad.
So that is what I didn't read this entire article. That's what Rory McIlroy is, you know, like I said, insinuating is that the tension in the relationship between Liv Golf and PGA, because they're trying to coexist with each other now.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being competitors, they're trying to help each other out, because Liv is kind of thriving because it's taking a lot of good players from the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Because they're getting paid. Those guys that Liv, they're getting paid whether they win or lose. Now, obviously, if they win, they get paid more. Well, in the PGA, you don't make a paycheck unless you play good, in excluding your endorsements and all that good stuff. So PGA is kind of trying to play nice with Liv, but at the same time, allegedly, there's some tension, and obviously, you still have tradition. I'm going to call them traditionalists, the old school players that know the PGA and how it's supposed to be played and that game of golf, that still hate Liv Golf and the way that they operate and the way that they've handled themselves. And then you have, you know, I'll go ahead and say COVID golfers, because, you know, a lot of these new players that are coming up watching golf, playing golf, they like Liv Golf because it's faster pace. It's team-based. You get to see some of the best players in the world just hit absolute fucking piss missiles everywhere. Because they play, I'm gonna say, easier courses than the PGA Tour. So that's where I think that there's the disconnect, is just different generations of players.
Well, plus they can play more recklessly because they're
it's team-based. It's team. Exactly. It's just more exciting.
What does that have to do with viewership? Like, oh, after the cut, there were so many Liv golfers that got cut because they're not very good.
I guess. I don't know. I have
killed
no idea.
The viewership. Like, DeChambeau was their one fleeting case, and he died in the third round.
Yeah.
I don't care what league you play for. I don't really care. I just like watching golf from time to time.
Exactly. See, you're the new age of a viewer for the
But
PGA.
Also, like, I don't know these newer names like you're saying. Like, I know DeChambeau and all them guys. Scheffler's new to me for the past like year or two. I think he's hasn't been in it too much. But like, I don't know a bunch of these names. But if you ask me, like, oh, Rory McIlroy or Tiger or Ricky Fowler or, you know, Jason Day, I know all those guys. But guess what? They all suck now.
John Rahm. Stud, yeah, even though he played like dog shit. Defending champ, and he shits the bed.
Brooks Koepka. Jesus. I know all them guys, but like, they, like the newer generation that's coming in that's really good this year and the past few years, I don't know them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like where my disconnect with the COVID golfer. I'm like, I don't know those names. I know older names.
I'm like you. I don't know a lot of the newer guys that are coming up, but I know, like you said, the Tigers, the Mickelsons, the Rickies.
There's no one that like has made a big name for themselves.
If I had to say, John Rahm is still like my favorite player, just because he gives people like me hope that people with short backswings can still hit the ball wicked fucking far. Because he's got a really short abbreviated backswing like myself.
I always liked Rory, but I think
he's falling off.
I think he's done though.
Yeah. 10 years, no major. Sorry, son. Time to move on. Find another sport.
Sounds like Tiger.
Poor guy. All right, let's move on.
Except even Tigers won a major in the last 10 years.
Enough golf talk. Where are we moving to next? Did you want to talk about Sweat and his shit bed?
Oh, let's talk about Caitlin Clark.
Clark, number one overall draft pick by the Indiana Fever. Man, I don't know how the WNBA draft works. I don't know if it's a lottery pick. I don't think it is. I don't watch the WNBA.
Honestly, you just threw me for a loop because I have no idea.
Because Indiana Fever must be awful because they had two number one picks back to back years. Just saying. Yeah. So Caitlin Clark.
You would assume it's like the NBA, right? And it's lottery.
I wouldn't. I would not assume. They only have like 12 teams.
So. I don't know. I have no idea.
I think the WNBA only has 12 teams. So a lottery pick in a 12-team system would kind of be little lackluster.
Listen, I'm not going to try to pretend to tell you about a league that I know nothing about.
Well, I will pretend at this very rare occasion.
I'm not going to be like one of those fake people that go, oh, I've been watching the WNBA for years. Like, no, I'm not going to lie to you. No one has been doing that. Everybody that's saying stuff like that is literal virtue signaling.
The only people that have been watching the WNBA for years are the players that sit on the bench yeah. and the commentators. It wasn't that funny.
That's pretty funny. I didn't...
So, Caitlin Clark, arguably the best women's player in college this year.
In college basketball ever.
Gets drafted number one overall. Signs a 4-year, $338,000 contract. It gets tiered out. I think she's due like $77,000 her first year or some shit.
Yep.
But on average, it breaks down to $84,500 a year.
Yep.
And everybody's up in arms about this. Oh, she's getting robbed, this and that. Well, I'm sorry. It's the WNBA. That organization doesn't make money.
We've already...
They subsidize their income off of the NBA's revenue.
The NBA, on a regular basis, pays the WNBA $10 million... No, $20 million a year to stay in business.
Yeah. The WNBA loses money. So, if you think about it from a percentage standpoint, Caitlin Clark is getting paid over... See, let me move my decimal a few different fucking times. Over 8 million% more because the WNBA doesn't make money.
Yeah. No. Listen, if you want the salaries, everybody's bitching about this. Do something about it. Okay? These people that get online and are like, this is so unfair, are the same people that when there is a WNBA game in their own fucking hometown, would never go in a million years.
Won't go, don't watch.
No.
So let me put this in perspective. Last year's number one overall pick, Aaliyah Boston, signed a 3-year, $230,468 contract.
Who's Aaliyah Boston?
Had to do my research. Like I said, I don't watch it, just did my research. She was a guard for Kentucky. That averages out to $77,000 and change a year. So she's still getting paid more on average per year than last year's number one overall pick. What more do you want? It's not like they can take money from every other player in the league and give it to Caitlin Clark.
The only way to fix the problem of players making more money, like the NBA, for example, is for more people to watch the games on TV, go to the games, and buy the merch. Guess what? If you go out and buy Caitlin Clark jerseys, guess who gets that money? Well, the WNBA.
But then
also Caitlin Clark. So if you want to give her more money, go buy her fucking shit.
So
guess what? Nike already said that they're going to do a contract with Caitlin Clark. Guess how much money it's projected to be?
$20 million.
I don't feel bad for her.
And
shit, Ice Cube already offered her $5 million just to play in the big three.
And it is said that Caitlin Clark can earn this year over $500,000 just for this season for provisions allowing her to enter marketing and promotional agreements with the league and her team.
Yeah.
So, yes, her contract is low. And I get, everyone's saying she'll make it up in other endorsements. Yeah, that's extra. Do I think that her contract's low? Sure. When you compare it to other professionals, especially male athletes, sure, it looks low.
But if
she goes in and plays and brings that same viewership that she, basically hyped up the NCAA tournament for women's basketball,
for sure,
and brings that to the WNBA, yeah, she'll get a pay increase, but it won't ever be what the NBA guys get. Not it won't be what her. The NFL players get.
No, not for her. It would have
you
to
want
be...
more money? The company has to make money.
Yeah.
And Ronda Rousey said it best when she was interviewed handful of years ago. And I'm going to quote this the best I can. Ronda Rousey was in an interview and asked about how much money she makes in reference to other women in professional sports. And Ronda Rousey said, Dana White didn't pay her, didn't make her the highest paid fighter because he wanted to do something nice for the ladies. That Dana White paid her or made her the highest paid fighter at that time because she brought in the most money at that time. One, she was an excellent fighter. Two, she's freaking gorgeous. So, yeah, you want to make more money, bring in more money.
That's another thing. She, I mean, Ronda at that point in time, her first five fights, she wasn't the highest paid. She had to win like 13 in a row without losing to be the highest paid. And then after losing, she became irrelevant again.
Yeah. And then just then went to WWE.
Here's, like you just said, if she brings viewership in the form that she did over the past few years in women's college basketball, that money may never seem to increase for her. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if you want to talk about like bringing relevance to the WNBA, I don't necessarily believe that it's going to happen this way, but we'll see. If you can bring continuous viewership back to the WNBA over time and then create more of a fan base of people that are actually watching and going to games and buying merchandise, then over time, every player will benefit with more money. But I don't foresee
that actually happening. But in theory, that's what could happen.
Yes.
So, and to put this in more perspective of Caitlin Clark's contract, the highest paid WNBA player this year is Jackie Young. Signed a 2-year contract worth $500,000. So she's due around $250,000 this year for her season. She's also a 2-time WNBA champion. So yeah, when you win rings, you also get paid, Caitlin Clark. So go win a couple rings with apparently the worst team in the league in the Indiana Fever.
Well,
and then you can talk about getting $500,000 contracts or more.
People also are mad about this, but like, if someone came up to me and was like, hey, we'll pay you $70,000 a year to play the sport you love for 4 months. Listen to that, too, by the way. 4 months. That's as long as their season is. And then the rest of the year, you know, you should have to train and be ready for the next season. Okay. I can make that happen.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Easy money. Easy money.
So I'd be down. So if anybody wants to offer me a WNBA contract for $70,000 to just go play, I'll play.
You gotta, you know, kind of bring your voice a little higher and not so low on the tone.
No, I don't. I just have to proclaim things.
That's true. It's 2024.
Yeah.
So this article that I've been kind of referring to throughout this Caitlin Clark segment, it goes on to compare her contract to other number one overall picks, and they're all male sports.
Well, then it's not comparable.
That's why this article is just is like you're not compare her to the women's national soccer team. Those women get paid a good chunk of change.
It took them winning and being the viewership being so high.
And you know what? They still get paid less than the men. But
because the men's viewership is even higher.
Exactly. But from a percentage standpoint, for their profit share, for percentage of revenue in versus what they get paid, their percentage is about triple the male percentage. The male percentage is barely 1% of the profit share, while the women's national team is closer to, it averages out to about 5% or so. But there's some players that make up to about 7, 8, 10% of the profit share. So I don't want to hear shit. You make more on percentage on the profit share. But let me compare, or I guess let me read this article that's comparing these contracts. So the NBA number one overall pick, Victor Wembanyama, yeah, whatever.
Wembanyama.
Yeah, sure.
That dude's also like 7'4".
4-year, $55 million contract. Yeah, the NBA also makes money, so they can afford to pay him.
He also, this year, I'm pretty sure, already made his first All-Star game.
That's irrelevant.
But you're asking me things like,
I'm not
he's
asking
good
you,
as fuck.
I'm not asking you anything. Well, Caitlin Clark is good as fuck.
Yeah, but he's good as fuck in a league where people watch every single night.
So, yes, he plays for a league that makes money. That's why he gets to make money, more money.
He's good in a league that makes money.
Bryce Young.
Yikes.
Drafted by the Carolina Panthers. Four years, $37.9 million. Also, plays for an organization that makes a shit ton of money. They own a whole day of the fucking week, okay?
He, in my personal opinion so far, has not been worth that money.
No. Baseball. Paul Skeens. That's how I'm going to pronounce his name. Pittsburgh Pirates, $9.2 million. And that's cheap as fuck for the MLB.
Yeah. And plus, that guy's probably playing in the...
He's probably in the minors somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. For at least a few years.
And the last one they use here, hockey. Connor Bedard. 3-year, $13 million contract. It's fucking hockey. Yes, the NHL gets more viewership. I would probably say, I'm not going to pull it up, I would probably say they get at least triple the viewership of the WNBA.
I bet you it's more than triple.
I'm being quite conservative.
Yeah, I bet you it's more than triple. We may not believe this as Midwesterners, but there is quite a big viewership for hockey in other areas.
Yeah, up north.
Up north, even in the south, I've heard really? Hockey is big in viewership.
That sounds awful. But, I mean, it all comes down to make money. If Caitlin Clark can make the WNBA more money, then she's going to make more money after her rookie deal. Plus, she's going to make more money on her endorsements, her other work with the league and her team. People just need to stop and think about the WNBA is still a business. You can't go into your work and demand a 40% raise if you're not bringing in 80% plus revenue.
It's not really even a business.
The WNBA is not a business. No. They're not out there to make money.
Oh, are they trying to make money?
Yeah.
Sure.
It's a business. It's supposed to be a business. What I'm saying is
name any other business that has lost money continuously XFL. For the past 20 years and still been around.
That's true.
To tell the tale.
So.
None. There's been none.
I know. But it's supposed to be a business.
If the NBA wasn't around, the WNBA would have declared bankruptcy like 5 times already.
It's also hard to believe that. I can't remember if it was 22 or 28 years that the WNBA has been around. It's in this article somewhere. Let's see if I can find it real quick.
And they've never made money. No. Ever.
Never a profit.
That's why you can't pay these people money.
When you're a league that's only been around for 28 years and you've got other leagues, and I'm talking about baseball, basketball, football, that have been around for 75, 120 years, yeah, it's going to be hard to pay you the same.
Yeah. And
the fact that you're a woman just, yeah, sorry. But there's other women out there in other sports that are getting paid. You want, go play tennis, go play golf.
That's go one play thing. Soccer. Yeah, like tennis.
Go play softball.
Actually does make, tennis women actually do make quite a good amount of money. But also, women's tennis has been around for like 100 plus years too, like you're saying.
Yeah. But. All right, I'm ready to move off Caitlin Clark. I just wanted to get my rant out about people that are just, you know, people, oh, poor her. She's being taken advantage of. Like,
people look at numbers without context. They just look, they go, oh, LeBron James makes $100 million a year, or probably not that much, but $100 million in his contract, and they only make $200,000 in their contracts? That's unfair. When they haven't looked like, LeBron James probably has 25 million Twitter followers, and any tweet he gets also gets like a billion likes. Plus, every night there's someone tuning in just to watch him and go watch him. Whereas on the flip side, that's not happening in the other scenario.
Yeah.
Dollars to views.
Like, I'm just going to say it, and we might get canceled for this. And I might sound like a misogynistic asshole, but I hate to tell you this, women that may or may not be listening to this.
We don't have any women viewers.
As much as we like to think that men and women are equal, we aren't. Should we be treated as? No, because we're completely fucking different creatures. That's why men's sports brings in more revenue, brings in more views because men are more exciting to watch. I'm sorry. And I would say most female athletes would say the exact same thing.
I mean, it's that, and there's so literally how many guys do you know that regularly watch sports? Most guys you know regularly watch at least a sport?
A sport or whatever sport or is
multiple
on.
Sports. How many women do you know that not only actively follow one sport, but also follow multiple sports? And not just multiple sports, also female sports. Zero. I guarantee you that number is very low. So the whole thing is like women don't even support their own
cause.
Yeah, so it's like sports. Guys, I guarantee you there are still more guy WNBA fans than there are women WNBA fans. Same with all women's sports. I guarantee you there's more men that follow women's USA team than there are women that follow women's USA team in soccer. I guarantee it.
I think it's a lot closer when you talk about soccer.
Just because I think it's closer.
Yeah.
But I still men like sports. Yeah. That's their like. You men.
And most men apparently now are gambling addicts.
Yes. I mean, also, yes.
They'll bet on anything that's on ESPN the Ocho.
That is true.
The Pillow Fight League. They'll bet on
it. I'm telling you, men are the main viewership. So you have to try to get men to watch. That's just how it is. And then when women want to blame not making money on men, when men are watching, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. It's a double-edged sword. I'm sorry. Like, you got to pick your poison. You got to pay your dues.
Ladies, start watching ladies.
Support your sex, I guess. I don't know. Or gender. Like, whatever you want to call it.
You know what the crazy thing is, right? You can go home and you can turn your TV. You don't have to watch.
Just turn it on.
Oh, WNBA games on tonight? If you are pro Caitlin Clark in the WNBA making more money, you're pro, go spend $39.99 on League Pass.
Boom.
Go spend. You don't even have to watch. You just have to do that, and then boom, they make more money. That's all you have to do.
Easy.
Now, if you don't want to do that because you just want to complain about things not being fair, even though they are, you just have to go buy it, then I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Do something or stop complaining, or both.
Lead, follow, or get out of the way. And a lot of people, when it comes to female sports, just get out of the way. They don't even want to deal with it. But let's move on. We've been on this topic for a little bit. Any last words on it?
No, that's okay. Fine.
So, who's this Sweat guy?
That goes to Vondre Sweat.
And he gets the DWI, and someone hit him, right?
Okay, so he's out, 4 a.m. What is it? Okay, so he's out Sunday night, Sunday morning, I guess, 4 a.m., yeah. And he's driving his Bronco. I don't know where he's going, home most likely. And someone rear ends him in his Bronco. And apparently the police the police got called.
Well, it's an accident. So
they were talking to him. He admitted he drank 2 to 3 shots of tequila before the crash happened. But he did not cause the crash. Someone crashed into him. And he got charged with a Class B misdemeanor of DWI.
I don't want to be drunk in public. I want to be drunk in a bar.
And so now his draft stock is completely tanked. He was going to be probably second round pick early day two. And now he's probably not even going to get drafted in the top like third, fourth, fifth round maybe.
I still think he'll be like a fourth round, late third.
This is crazy.
I mean, something like this, I think a team can definitely, depending on prior incidences, a team could potentially overlook, especially if they brought him in for like a team interview. He could probably save his draft stock slightly with specific teams that were already interested in him.
This happened after all the team interviews.
These guys can still go into these teams, yeah.
No, they're not allowed to right now.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because
Caleb Williams, instead of having a team meeting, is having a dinner with a team because it's not a, it's not league, it's not a legal. I guess that's not real. It has nothing to do with legality. You're not supposed to have team meetings anymore.
Yeah, because a lot of these guys have still been visiting these quote unquote teams, or I guess I should say quote unquote visiting.
I think they have to.
They can't
say
do it.
We're going to the facility.
It can't be an organized team activity.
Yeah,
basically.
Something weird.
So it
like
has
that.
To be outside the facility, more or less.
Something stupid like that.
But these guys are still talking to coaches. They're still talking to owners. We all know they are, which I don't have a problem with.
This goes back to the same thing we talked about with the Rice situation, though. Also, like, hey, man, you couldn't have called an Uber?
Nah.
Get your ass home?
Nah.
You took 2 to 3 shots? You couldn't have waited another hour to leave this party that you
just
were at? Just
hang out for a
little
bit.
Who's taking 2 to 3 shots of tequila at 4 o'clock in the morning?
We've been pushing it a few times. Not tequila, but we've been pushing it a few times.
Yeah, but when we have those shots, we're usually at the place we're staying at for the night.
That's true. That's true. And we're not NFL prospects.
Yeah, I also have no chance of making millions of dollars after getting drafted next week.
Yeah.
Hey bro, how about you wait an extra week to party?
Hey man,
you can party on Friday night.
Like
when you get drafted.
Where's his boys like helping him out? Like, hey, we probably shouldn't be doing this. Hey, you probably shouldn't be like, he needs to surround himself with better people.
Yeah. That's another thing. Where are your friends at in this moment?
At least where's your fall guy? And put his ass in the driver's seat. Oh, he was driving. I'm too fucked up.
Yeah. So that's like, it sucks. He's probably going to fall off and not make as much money now just because.
At least on his rookie deal.
Sure. Yeah. Just because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time and had some tequila shots.
Had a little too much fun. Hey, we've all been there.
In other news, we'll touch on, since there wasn't that much NFL news, there was also Jonte Porter's lifetime ban from the NBA.
Yeah, and we were kind of talking about this off mic, so I'm going to let you go and take the reins on this, on what happened. But from what I know, is all I know is that he got a lifetime ban for some sort of betting and tampering or some shit like that.
So there's been an ongoing investigation into this after some point shaving situations happen. And apparently, from all reports, is Jonte Porter was giving insider information to NBA bettors to make bets either on his behalf or to make money from their bets. And what he would do is he would say, hey, tonight.
Allegedly.
He would say, hey, tonight, I'm not feeling too hot. I'll take that as it is. He'd go into a game. He would come out and be like, I'm not feeling good, coach. Can't keep going tonight. And then the people would win money on their bets. This happened a few different times. He gave insider information about other injuries that people weren't supposed to know about. I don't have an exact number of win percentages and all that, but they said the bets did range anywhere from $15 bets to $22,000 bets in terms of what they were betting. Now, how much they won, they don't really tell you. But this ended up, after investigation, lifetime ban for Jonte Porter.
What a guy.
I mean, you're going to play stupid games.
Win stupid prizes.
Yeah, exactly. So I think totally deserved. If you're going to shave points, you shouldn't be in the NBA. You shouldn't be in any sporting event ever. I think point shaving is one of the most dirty, rotten shit that you can do. I feel like, now, if it was been the flip side and he's like, hey, man, bet on me tonight. I'm getting like 25 points. Go on me tonight. That's different.
But he would still get the same consequence.
Yes. Well, which is dumb.
Actually, I don't think he would get the same lifetime ban, but I think he would still get some sort of consequence. Now, I want you to say what you told me about this guy not being a big time player and why you think he got this.
Confidence. So let me read you his stats for this year because they're actually actively available. So this year he is averaging 4.4 points, 3.2 rebounds,
fucking stud,
2.3 assists, and 0.8 blocks in an average 13 minutes and 50 seconds per game. In other words, he is a very mid to not very good.
It sounds like he's more of like an 8 guy.
Yeah, he's not very good NBA player. And so what I'm thinking is Adam Silver goes, oh, look at this. Sweet. A terrible player that I can instantly lifetime ban so that anytime a good player thinks about doing something similar to this, they'll go, yeah, I don't want to be banned from the NBA forever.
Yeah. So this is what I'm saying that a lot of other commissioners should do in other leagues, that they need to set a precedence that anything like this, and I think there's other things, not just tampering and illegal sports betting, but somebody needs to be made an example of. And the NFL has dropped the ball so many times on a lot of their athletes. Big name, small name, it doesn't matter. They've dropped the ball, and that's why they continue to have players make stupid-ass fucking decisions. Off the field, and especially during the offseason. The NFL needs to make a statement like Silver did. Now, did Silver make it on a player that, like you said, isn't quite relevant to his team's success? Probably. Would somebody like Jimmy Butler get the same treatment? We don't know. Probably not. I don't think he would give Jimmy Butler a lifetime ban or LeBron James a lifetime ban.
I don't think Jimmy Butler would be making bets against himself.
Well, I'm just saying, theoretically.
Yeah.
We could probably assume that they wouldn't get the lifetime ban. But Silver's trying to at least make the notion that, hey, fuck around and find out. Yeah. So I applaud Adam Silver for this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think, like, it's not the Pete Rose thing. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, I bet on myself. No.
But he got the lifetime. Pete Rose treatment.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out.
Well, that's why everybody's been so much for Pete Rose making the Hall of Fame still, because homeboy never bet against himself.
That's true.
If I was a player too, and I saw a line, I'm like, that line, definitely shit. I'm hitting that line tonight. This pitcher's trash. And
that's the guy's throwing up fucking meatballs. Let me put my fucking bib on.
I would
feast.
Honestly, if I was a player, tell me if this is illegal. If I was a player and I got on Twitter right before looking at my lines and shit, and I'm like, hey, if I was y'all.
Yeah,
I would hit the over because I'm about to fucking toast this dude.
Yeah, I think that would still be frowned upon.
But you're not betting. You're just giving better information.
I think it's frowned upon.
You think so?
I think so.
Yeah, I like what Adam Silver did. I would have, you know, set the example like, peace out, dude.
Yeah, see ya.
It's that easy.
I think more commissioners need to kind of take a note here and set more, you know, what am I trying to say? More disciplinary action in setting precedence for actions like illegal sports betting
inside the league.
But I'm just tired of people like, oh man, he's an integral part of a team. We really need him, so we're just gonna give him a 6-game ban or a 4-game ban. Like, no, someone needs to be made a fucking example of, or you're gonna keep having the same fucking problem. It
depends on if that person's making the league money.
That's the problem, is that...
I know it's a problem.
When it's the NBA, I think it's different. Because there's a small handful, I would say, in the NBA that truly are the faces of the organization. While you look at the NFL, there's 32 teams. How many teams are in the NBA? 24? 22? Something like that? There's
still like 32.
No, there's not 32 teams in the NBA. There's like 20, 22.
There's not
30 in the NBA.
There's more than 22. I can tell you that much for a fact.
Well, I'm sure there's not 30.
There's 32 teams.
In the NBA?
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, 30.
Yeah, okay. I thought it was more like 22 or 24.
Oh, 29 in the United States, 1 in Canada.
Oh, okay.
No, dude. I knew there wasn't just 20. Because there's 10 teams that have a chance to get in the playoffs.
That's fucking stupid.
And
they have the... Okay. We're getting sidetracked here. But, you know, when I look at the NBA, I can think of, like I said, a small handful of guys that are the faces of that organization. While you look at the NFL, each team has... With the exception of a few, each team should have at least one face that makes up that whole organization, which it will in turn the entire entity of the NFL. Some teams have multiple faces. You take a look at the Chiefs, Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes. You take a look at the Cowboys, Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Micah Parsons. Those are all three guys that I would say are part of the faces of the NFL.
Yeah, I would say for most teams, the face... Is usually the starting quarterback.
But you can't say that about, you know, some teams like the Bears.
Or and Panthers.
Or Pittsburgh, currently. Or the Broncos, currently.
It definitely depends, for sure.
So that's where I forget the point I was trying to make. And now I just kind of got... I went in circles here.
You were saying that we need to punish more faces.
I'm saying that there needs to be... somebody at that level that if they fuck up needs to be punished. Like we talked about.
I think if you're at that level, you don't do things like this.
Well, we talked about
because you already make so much money.
We talked about Rashee Rice last week and his fuck up. And he's not at that level of being the face of an organization like the NFL.
No,
but he's still part of that team that is, you know, associated with being an NFL team worldwide.
Yeah.
With the Kansas City Chiefs.
What you're saying is if, let's say Rashee Rice was actually Justin Jefferson.
Oh, yeah.
And would he be punished the same as Rashee Rice?
Well, we don't know what Rashee Rice's punishment's going to be.
But what I'm saying, what you're trying to say is Rashee Rice might get 4 to 6 game suspension.
And I still think he should get the death penalty.
Or and he might get more. If Justin Jefferson did the exact same thing.
He get a slap on the wrist, 2 games.
Might get it. Yeah, exactly. But that's also because Justin Jefferson probably is like 10th in jersey sales.
Yeah. And I don't think that league should take that into account. Now, I agree. It's a business. You're supposed to make money. You can't get rid of
businesses take that thing into account. If you're CEO.
Oh, yeah. If you look like shit, I'm sorry. You're going to make our company look bad. See ya.
That's only if you have a board.
True.
Because the board makes the decisions for the company.
Well, there's a board in the NFL. It's the owners. All 32 of them. Well, yeah, technically 31 because so the Packers are publicly owned.
That's what I'm saying. So then at that point, it would have to be so bad that all the owners are like, we can't keep them in the league anymore. Because, I mean, look at all the... the bad stuff that's happened.
That's what I'm saying. Roger Goodell, you know, he's justifies some of these punishments as quote unquote protecting the shield, being the NFL logo, the shield. But these are just a slap on the wrist of these players.
I feel like someone you have to pull an OJ
and just fucking send them.
I feel like you'd have to pull an OJ to get kicked.
Wow. R.I.P. Actually, fuck that guy. He was kind of an asshole.
not an RP. But yeah, so you'd have to do something so bad that they have to kick you.
I don't know. I'm just tired of athletes in general, professional athletes in general, that are
professional athletes have been shitheads for a long fucking time.
I'm just tired of it at this point. Let's move on. I'm getting a little.
What would we talk about if we didn't have shitheads to talk about?
Pass.
Okay.
So. Speaking of shitheads, and I know you and I are going to disagree on this, but Colorado loses 15 players to the portal, and I'm talking about Colorado University and their football team, and Coach Sanders downplays the situation in an interview this past week. Like, who are we losing? Potential starters? So what? That's kind of the gist of the interview. He just kind of downplays it and says that he trusts his coaches, his recruiting staff, and himself. Now you're still listen, on. You're still on.
Listen, how many players?
Train 15.
How many? 15.
15.
That's 15 players that ain't got that dog in them.
Look, I'm sorry.
Ain't got no gas in them.
When you go into an organization, I guess we can't call it an organization. When you go into a team at the college level and essentially replace the whole team with, this is going to sound bad, with your boys, and then you get shit on?
Man, that's some exciting games.
You still have the audacity to say, trust me, when 15 players leave your team, that's a coaching problem.
Bro, they tripled their wins.
That ain't hard to fucking
in one
do.
Season.
What, I mean, what,
give so, the man so what, a little bit of a
so
break.
So what, they had four wins?
Yeah.
And they started off good, played against scrub-ass teams. Then they started getting to their actual schedule and got shit on.
That's the analysts overhyping what they already had. Four wins is not bad for the first year when you had trash the year before.
What do you mean? He replaced the whole team.
No, he didn't.
There was one returning player. One returning starter.
So we had to completely start from scratch.
Most of these guys he brought in.
He brought in three guys, and the three guys that he brought in were fucking good. Well,
no, Shedeur Sanders is trash.
I won't say he's trash.
He's trash.
He lacks some...
everything. He's got great athletic ability, and that's about it. His ability to play quarterback is absolutely horrendous.
That Travis Hunter's great.
Travis Hunter... one of the best fucking players in the league, changing my mind.
The other wide receiver brought in good. But what happens this year.
This is a coaching problem.
15? No, it's not. Oh, my God.
You're telling me if you lost 15 players, it's not a coaching problem?
No. A transfer portal has opened up. Everyone is losing everyone.
I'm going to say 15. You're not losing 15 players from...
look at how much Alabama just lost.
I don't know. Pull it up.
Alabama probably lost like 25 fucking people.
Most of those guys are leaving because of PT. Because Alabama recruits so goddamn good.
Yeah, and I bet you some of these other people are leaving because of PT. Because fucking Sanders brought in people that are like, these guys got dog in them.
No. I'm not even going to look at Colorado's schedule. And I say they probably still win only 5-6 games.
I don't think so.
Sanders is not a good coach.
You got one year. He won two championships in the other division, and you're telling me after one year, he's a terrible coach.
Yep. That's all I needed to see.
Cool. So 99% of the entire NCAA football programs have terrible coaches.
What do you mean?
There's only like two or three coaches that have won national championships in the last fucking 10 years.
Yeah. There's also
so everyone else is trash.
No.
Dogs. Complete garbage.
No, because more teams are winning more than four games.
Not more, less than you think.
I'm going to say in Division One, FBS, I'm going to go ahead and put the over at 60% are winning more than four games. Mostly because there's how many bowl games and you have to win at least
I bet you for the past like decade, Nebraska has averaged under four wins.
Why are we talking about Nebraska? I didn't say anything about Nebraska.
I'm just bringing up random teams here.
Oh, let's bring up random ass teams. I bet fucking Youngstown State has won more games before, than Colorado.
Before the last 3 years, you could look at KU. KU was averaging less than four wins a year.
Yeah, and you know what? They had terrible fucking coaching.
Everyone's just terrible. One year, fucking terrible.
Also,
with KU, a terrible program.
Also, KU can't fucking recruit worse shit because they're a basketball school. K-State... their coaching is better, but they...
I wouldn't say Colorado has ever been in anything sport, team, like college.
I would agree with that.
They're not a blue blood. They're not a red blood. I don't even know what...
But you look at Kansas State. Kansas State's got good coaching, but terrible recruiting because they can't pull enough out-of-state talent to compete at a high level with some of these SEC schools, the way that they can, you know, recruit out-of-state. But Kansas State... they make all their players better by getting them out of local junior colleges, local high schools, and just have better coaching.
Okay.
In my opinion.
So, they play North Dakota State. Win.
50-50.
Easy win. They play Nebraska.
Easy win.
Win. Play Colorado State. Win. Play Baylor. Lose.
Not just lose. Fucking roll.
Play UCF. 50-50. Rolled. Play K-State. Lose. Play Arizona, lose. Cincy, lose. Texas Tech, 50-50. Utah.
Rolled.
Yeah, probably. Kansas, rolled. Fucking Oklahoma State, rolled.
Okay, yeah. See, You're starting to see that now that they're playing.
That's not. These other teams are good teams. Baylor, it's good team.
It's hard to
Kansas State, good team. Arizona, good team.
A team culture. And when I played college ball, culture was a big thing. Now, we weren't a truly successful program. We had some issues that we were going through when I played. But we were still in contention, nationally ranked for a little bit, and almost made the national tournament my sophomore year. But our culture was established because we didn't recruit a lot out of junior college. We didn't have a lot of transfers come in, come out, let alone 15. So there's a culture problem in Colorado.
We're talking about a difference of like 10 years. The transfer portal has really opened up.
I agree. And
if you don't like your coach, if your coach is making you run running sprints every day because you won't go to class, but you go to somewhere else because they don't give a shit, then yeah, you're probably going to leave.
I don't know what top tier program in college doesn't discipline players for missing class.
Alabama.
I guarantee you those guys, I would say most of those guys on that team are at least 2.5 students and go to class.
Yeah, because they probably hand them 2.5 GPAs.
I don't think so.
I do think so.
I don't think so.
Nope. I bet you if there was ever an investigation over the past decade of teams that they just hand them GPAs.
I don't think so. Now, do they take easy classes? Sure. They might take some easy classes, business majors.
Hey, okay. you have to take sitting on the toilet for an hour there.
But I'm going to go ahead and say the vast majority of student athletes at any level, in any sport, are held to an academic standard of at least 2.5, and they truly get that 2.5.
You also got to like, so instead of staying in the ACC where Colorado was definitely the bottom of the fucking ring, he moved them to at least a Power 5 that maybe in the future they can compete in.
Maybe. But they're so far well, I guess not.
Are they really that far behind?
One thing I can say about Sanders is he can recruit players because of his name, not because he's a good coach. People just want to play for him. And yeah. Warren Sapp is his D-line coach now.
Yeah.
The highest paid. He's a TA. He's a teaching assistant at Colorado so he can be part of this program and is the highest paid TA.
Well, if you got the opportunity to not only play for Deion Sanders, probably one of the greatest greatest professional athlete of all time, and then also... Is it?
You said one of. Okay. One of the greatest athletes of all time. Sure.
I think there's only two people on the list.
Yeah.
Anyway. And at the same time, you also are like, I'm defensive lineman. And then now you have the opportunity to play with Warren Sapp.
But would I rather play with Deion Sanders and Warren Sapp, or I guess play for Deion Sanders and Warren Sapp, who have not shown they have the ability to produce... NFL first and second round talent, or do I want to go play for Nick Saban, who his entire staff
Nick Saban
is gone. But I'm talking.
Name another coach.
I'm still gonna go ahead. I'll just say Alabama in general. It doesn't matter who their coach is because their whole coaching staff make NFL talent. Period.
I guarantee you, there are NFL owners, analysts, everything out there, that when they go up to Deion, they go, hey, don't bullshit. How good is this kid? And Deion goes, nah, he's the real deal.
He would say that. He would say that about his son, Shedeur Sanders, and we all know he's absolutely and trash. Then,
okay, so take him out of it then. If they go up to Warren Sapp, I'm like, hey, real deal, is this guy good? I guarantee you they're going to take the opinion of one of the best defensive linemen of all time. And like, yeah, that makes sense.
I don't think so. Most because this is the first year Warren Sapp's ever coached at this level. Just because you're a good player doesn't make you a good coach.
I personally would take Warren Sapp's opinion over some random.
Just because you're a good player, like I said, doesn't make you a good coach. There's a lot of players that actually suck that are fantastic coaches. You look at... Coach McDaniels for the Dolphins. That shit had never played fucking football in his life. One of the best coaches in the league right now.
I would make a bet with you right now that Colorado wins 5 games.
I said they would win 5, maybe 6 games. But they're not going to be...
5 or 6 is not bad.
That's still a losing record.
I mean, yeah.
That's still not impressive.
You're going to have to... You played two... Okay, so now that Texas and Oklahoma are gone...
Yeah.
I would say both Kansas teams are in the top three, maybe four of the Big 12. And then you also have teams like, we said, Arizona is going to be halfway decent. Who else is in the Big 12? Dang it. Now
Utah, BYU.
Now I'm forgetting. Yeah. Utah, BYU. Give me a Big 12.
K-State, KU, Texas Tech, Oak State. Now Colorado again. USF.
I just had it pulled up. Why is this?
I'm trying to go off some other stuff just off the top of my head.
Come on. Here we go.
You gotta go faster with your computer, man. Let's go.
All right. So we take Texas and Oklahoma out of it. You still got teams that last year won 10 games. So Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
Up there. Kansas State. Iowa State's still good. I mean, I think West Virginia's going to fall off, but I mean, other than that, UCF only won 6 games. TCU only won 5 games. BYU only won 5 games. Baylor, shoot, I think we overplayed Baylor. Baylor won 3 games last year. Houston only won 4 games. Cincy only won 3 games. Like, it's very easily they could come in and be 5th or 6th in the Big 12.
Only because the Big 12 is weak sauce? Is that what you're saying? Not because he's a good coach.
But then, other than, I mean, you added Utah and BYU. Arizona. BYU's already there, and they stunk.
Oh, okay.
So, maybe they end up probably 7 or 8, 6, maybe.
That's
better than they would have finished in the ACC.
Well, the ACC is about to disband.
Yeah.
After this year. After the 24 season.
So, I don't know, man.
What considers
success? If he comes out this year and ends up like third in the Big 12, are you going to be like, I was wrong?
No.
You're only going to say you're wrong if he wins the Big 12 this year.
No, I still wouldn't say that.
If he won the Big 12 this year, you're not going to be like, oh, I was wrong about it.
No, because then he still has to show the fact that he can coach more than just one season. I know I just made a completely redundant statement about I've seen one season and it was trash. But when you come out here and you promise me ships and your best effort is 4 fucking wins. I don't know if he
ever promised a ship.
He did. He did. And then he come out this offseason and said, just watch us next year. So if he doesn't even make the college football playoffs, I don't want to fucking hear it. Coach Sanders is not a good coach. If he
wins like 8 or 9 games this year, that's a W.
And I would for him, sure.
That's more wins than Colorado's had in the past decade.
But what's going to suck for the Big 12 is if he does win the Big 12 and Colorado wins the Big 12, gets in the playoffs, and then gets completely shit on, it's going to make Big 12 look really bad.
Why? That's Oklahoma and Texas every year.
Oklahoma and Texas still compete.
Yet they compete and lose. All the time.
But they don't get rolled. We need to move on. We've been going around circles on this for a while. Man, we've been going on circles on all of our topics. So we're going to run through these ones, and then we'll get into a little bit of draft talk. So very, very minuscule moves this past week going into draft week. J.K. Dobbins signed with the Chargers. That's a good move by the Chargers. Cowboys get their third running back in Royce Freeman. They still need some help in that room. We talked about
that. That's great. That's wonderful.
The Colts extended Buckner to 2-year, $46 million contract. Look, I like Buckner. He's a good defensive tackle. But God, man, the dude's getting old, and that's a lot of money. I would have much rather saw a 1-year deal. But hey, 2 years, sure, we got him. That kind of tells me that they're probably going to be looking at drafting a defensive tackle late in this draft, most likely, and having him, you know, be Buckner's pad one.
Just so I don't get rolled later on in like the comments or I realize I was saying the ACC this entire time. I meant the Pac-12. And now that I've corrected myself, every time I said ACC, just remember I meant Pac-12.
Retract that. Flip it. Reverse it. Devontae Smith and Jalen Daniels are going to exercise their fifth-year option and are going to be with their respective teams, the Eagles and Dolphins, through the 2025 season.
Smart move by both of them.
And despite continued rumors, T. Higgins and Justin Jefferson are both believed to that they will remain on their respective teams for at least the start of the 24 season.
I never had a doubt that Justin Jefferson was staying. I'm still kind of surprised T. Higgins is like not wanting to move.
No, I think T. Higgins wants to move. I just think that he's come to the realization that the Bengals aren't going to move him yet. I still think the same thing about Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson knows that he's not going to move yet.
Justin Jefferson just has to make the best out of his situation and hope that the Vikings draft J.J. McCarthy.
J.J. McCarthy, yeah. So we ran through all that. Do you have anything to say about the Royce Freeman signing other than it's like,
I mean, really? There's nothing against Royce Freeman or anything, but like signings like this, literally just do nothing but piss me off. Because I'm like, we haven't done anything. Breaking news. The Cowboys have signed a running back. And I'm like, okay, well, who is it? Royce Freeman. And I'm like, a guy that barely played last year? So, okay.
Like, between our teams, Cowboys and the Colts, at least the Colts have re-signed their key assets.
Yeah, I mean, like, we didn't even re-sign. We haven't. Yeah. Stephon Gilmore's not re-signed.
He's not going to come back, dude. Stop holding out for like, he's not coming back.
There are people that we've been like, okay, see you later.
I think Stephon Gilmore will go unsigned into the season and someone will pick him up in season due to injury, due to lack of development from a rookie or something like that.
It just makes no sense because we could probably offer the guy like veteran minimum almost to come back and just hang out for a season. Have the best cornerback room in the entire league.
I agree.
But
now, what do you think about all this shit coming out that Dak Prescott is looking for $60 million a year?
I haven't heard anything about it.
That's all I see is that he is looking for $60 million a year average salary.
Okay, we'll go win me a Super Bowl.
Shit, I don't even think that's worth $60 million a year. Win me a Super Bowl. These other quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls or even been to the Super Bowl aren't making $60 a year. But that's just bonkers, man.
I feel like that's been the story, is that, but also at the same time, like the Jones family has been known to put out stories about their players
allegedly
around contract time, allegedly to make fans upset with the players.
Well, but from what you tell me, the Cowboy fandom doesn't like Dak Prescott already, other than yourself.
I would say it's a very 50-50.
Okay, that's a lot better than what you've told me in the past and recorded on this podcast.
Oh, well, yeah,
you said,
I mean, if
you
I,
said
if
the
you
vast
go look at
majority
any,
of Cowboy fans don't at, like Dak Prescott.
If you go look at any comment section or of any article about Dak Prescott, I would also say a majority of people are just absolutely trashing him.
Because I only know two Cowboy fans. You and my buddy Gene at work. You like Dak. You don't thoroughly think that he's the best quarterback in the league, but you think he's a good quarterback.
I know how quarterbacks work in the NFL. He is a good enough quarterback. But is he the best quarterback? No.
No,
he's not. But also, I know that going into a draft and thinking, oh, we're just going to draft a QB or we're just going to pick some other QB up is so unreasonably fucking stupid.
I agree. Yeah.
That fans are just dumb. Like, hey, Carolina, how did Bryce Young work out for you?
Well, most people other than all the analysts saw that one coming.
Hey, Pittsburgh. How did Kenny Pickett?
Okay, everybody was wrong on that, including you and me.
Hey, Jets. How did Rosen? Or not Jets? Miami. How did Rosen turn out for you?
I never really thought Rosen was going to be that good, but he was a tremendous, absolute bust.
Guy I really like. Jets, how did Sam Darnold turn out?
Hey,
like, there's fuck still, around.
I still think Sam has potential. I don't think he's a Super Bowl quarterback, but I was also wrong about other guys.
Like, fuck around. Like, if like you really think, as a fan, when you get 10 to 12 wins and you're so mad at your fucking quarterback, even when they're putting up like 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns, you are delusional to think you're going to get anything out of the draft or in free agency that's going to do anything better.
Okay, I didn't see this conversation going quite that direction.
Fans legitimately, I get it has to be in all franchises, but specifically with Cowboys franchise, are so fucking delusional, it's ridiculous.
I would say, I don't know. I really don't know that many Colts fans, and I don't follow a lot of threads and forums just because I do follow. I am part of one NFL's life or something like that group on Facebook, and I'm starting to realize football fans are fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I had to leave this group because of some of the shit they were saying. I just couldn't handle anymore.
Do you realize that I've seen comments and stuff that say we should just cut Dak Prescott? Oh, you want to cut your fucking starting quarterback? You want to have $50 million in dead cap space? Do you know what that does? Are you stupid? Even if you hate him, you'd have to be an idiot to want to have $40 to $50 million in dead cap.
Ask Broncos fans how they feel about that.
Yeah, and they're in hell.
So let's move on to a little bit of draft talk. I think, needless to say, Caleb Williams is going to be the number one overall pick.
It would be the worst decision of the Browns.
Bears.
Oh, maybe that's some foreshadowing right there.
No, it's not.
Duh, Browns.
No. Duh, Bears. So Caleb Williams is going to be the number one overall pick for the Bears. Terrible
first pick. If I was the GM of the Bears.
The Bears.
You know what I'd do?
First overall pick.
Marvin Harrison Jr.
With what quarterback?
Yeah, now I wait and I let the other people
decide who your quarterback is. Do you know who the Bears starting quarterback is currently?
Not a fucking clue.
That Division III quarterback, Tyson Bagent.
Hey, he actually didn't have a bad season last year.
He had two good games that kind of surprised everyone and played like shit the rest of them. Then they have Brett Rippon as a second string.
He's obviously not, they're going to be their starters. What I would do is take the obvious number one player in a position that I still need.
At the number 10 overall pick?
And then at number 9, be like, okay, Caleb Williams is gone. Drake May got drafted. Maybe
Jaden Daniels is going to be, after Caleb Williams goes, Jaden Daniels is quarterback number 2. In my opinion, I think Jaden Daniels is a second quarterback off the board.
Okay, well, let's say all three of them are gone. I still have J.J. McCarthy sitting right there.
J.J. McCarthy will, I firmly believe the Vikings are
You're telling me up. Four quarterbacks are going in the first 9 picks.
Absolutely. I think for sure. If you're all high and mighty on J.J. McCarthy, and you said that you are.
That's the 10th pick.
That's
the 10th for the Jets. Or the Giants.
Well, I can tell you.
Jesus Christ.
Well, the Vikings would have to trade up to that pick.
Cool. You know what? I don't want any of those fucking quarterbacks in the first place.
Because here's the thing. If
you take all those quarterbacks off the board.
Okay.
All of them.
Okay.
I'm still sitting on Bo Nix. Michael Penix Jr.?
God, fucking Bo Nix.
Stop talking about Bo Nix like that.
Dude, I'm sitting Oregon on so many quarterbacks. Oregon quarterbacks don't work in the NFL. Good.
I'm sitting on so many quarterbacks that are still good. Michael
Penix Jr. is interesting. I will give him that, but I'm so out on Bo Nix. I think he's electric. I think he's a great college quarterback, but I don't think he's going to be. I would put him just under good NFL quarterback. I don't think
he Your has boy the, Joe Milton.
He's a backup for sure for a while, but I think he has potential in his later years after, you know, a couple years sitting behind a good quarterback.
Yeah. I just think I would take Bo Nix. I like Bo Nix. I've liked Bo Nix for a long time.
I like Bo Nix as a college quarterback. He's a great college quarterback.
Honestly, I would say I would take Michael Penix over Bo Nix, but he got injured in that national championship game, and I don't know how that's going to all pan out. But Michael Penix was, when it comes to fast outside throws, Michael Penix was spot on all year last year. I don't understand how. So J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix were in the national championship, both national championship quarterbacks, and both really good. I don't understand how three non-national championship quarterbacks are all ranked above those two guys.
Well, I can say that USC, the team that Caleb Williams played for, didn't have a defense worth shit. Caleb Williams still put up a shit ton of numbers and not a shit ton of points.
Caleb Williams is not a winner.
It's hard to win games when your defense gives up 35 points.
Hey,
I'm going to hate saying this.
I was about to say, I'm going to hate saying this. I know the Chiefs did it. Patrick Mahomes won games giving up 50 fucking points.
Not 50, but his defense gave up 28 points a game, and he was still putting up 30, 35.
In 13 seconds, Patrick Mahomes drove his team down the field and won a game.
I'm aware.
Has Caleb Williams ever done that?
No.
Absolutely fucking not. Not a winner.
So, if we're talking about winners, the only winners...
J.J. McCarthy. Is
J.J. McCarthy. Guy knows how to win games. But
been to a national championship twice. Won one.
But what I'm going to say about J.J. McCarthy is he's a good game manager and he's a good quarterback. But is he a playmaker like Caleb Williams is? I don't think so. I think Caleb Williams is a better playmaker. Do I think that...
His antics outweigh his playmaking ability.
I agree. I don't like his antics. He's too Hollywood. And NFL players currently are already putting him on blast about it.
He honestly could be basically the next Baker Mayfield.
Johnny Football?
I don't think it's as bad as Johnny Football. Because, like, Johnny Football was, like, partying and doing drugs and all this other stuff. And then selling his merch on the side and doing all this stuff. I don't think it's that bad. But it could be just as bad as Baker. When Baker came into the league and was antics. After doing all of his stupid shit, his fucking hip thrust and fucking mounting the flag in the middle of the field. And yeah, he was good too.
Barely.
Fucking doesn't matter.
So where I wanted to go with this, and Caleb Williams will be the number one overall pick. For the Bears, what does this really fix? I mean, we look at the moves that the Bears made in the offseason. They lost Darnell Mooney. But they got Keenan Allen, who we can agree is pretty still fucking good wide receiver at his age.
Yeah.
They got DeAndre Swift at running back, which, okay, in this system, especially with Caleb Williams, might be okay. They still have DJ Moore. Okay. And then their wide receiver three, Tyler Scott. Like, who? Cole Kmet's a very serviceable tight end. I think he's solid.
So you're making my point for me. Draft Marvin Harrison Jr. and then draft J.J. McCarthy.
I'm telling you, if the Bears did that, the Vikings are trading up higher than the Bears to get their quarterback. To make sure they get J.J. McCarthy. If the Bears don't take a quarterback at number one overall, somebody's trading up above them to make sure they get their quarterback.
This is draft day. This is literally draft day.
Sure.
What's that guy's name? Off draft day.
It's also Bo.
Bo. Huh.
And you know what? He drops.
Bo Callahan. Yeah. It's just Caleb. This is what's going to be hilarious. Like, if they will draft Marvin Harris Jr., it's going to freak everybody out. And I'm like, what the hell? And then everybody's gonna be like, what's wrong with him? What's wrong with him? And then it's going to get to, like, the fifth round pick and Caleb Williams.
Fifth overall.
Yeah. And Caleb Williams still isn't drafted. And then all of a sudden, freaking the Bears are going to get back on the phone. Like, I want this pick, and this pick.
That's not going to happen. The way this is set up, I mean, draft day is just so, I think, bizarre in the fact that teams would panic like that. Like, these guys in the analytics now, they have contingencies on contingencies, especially in the first round, if something doesn't go according to plan. In my mind, the first round should go through in, like, just 20 minutes. Every team should already know what their pick's going to be by the time it gets to them, or if they're going to trade back.
I think most of that time that they spend when they don't instantly put in a team,
it's mostly the NFL taking their time.
That,
so they can, you know, sell ads or whatever.
That and a lot of, like, just guys having discussions on phones about, like, would you give us all this? Or, hey, would you take this? And most of the time, other teams are just going, no. No.
They're just shopping to see what they can get, but they really don't want it. They really don't want to sell it.
No. It's just seeing what you can get. And if some other team comes in and says something stupid, I'm like, we'll give you all this. And then they go, oh, okay. Well, let's sell that for you, to you then. But no.
So what I want to get at is, What is Caleb Williams going to do for the Bears? What will it fix? They signed a shit ton of offensive linemen this past offseason in free agency, which they gave up 50 sacks last year, sixth most. And the offensive linemen they signed aren't that good, aren't that much better than what they had. They bolstered their defense slightly. Their defense was slightly below middle of the road. They were 20th in scoring, 22nd against the pass. First against the run, good job. 12th in total yards. Do I see Caleb Williams fixing this team? No, I don't. I think it's a coaching problem. I think Justin Fields didn't get a fair shake because of the coaching staff. Do I think I might be... Oh, am I still slightly higher on Justin Fields than I should be? Yeah, I am. But I think he didn't get his fair shake with that Bears franchise because I think the coaching staff is fucking atrocious. I think the GM staff in the front office for the Bears franchise is absolutely fucking terrible. Period.
I think with the roster that Caleb Williams could get just as many wins. They might go to the playoffs.
Well, I mean, and they got an extra first round pick. So they get Caleb Williams at one. And then you said they got 9, even though I thought it was 10, but they got 9.
It's 9.
At 9, they get a receiver or a corner. Or safety.
Let's say they draft.
They don't need an edge rusher.
Let's
they got sweat.
Say they draft Caleb Williams number one overall, which is gonna is probably gonna happen.
It's gonna happen.
Then they can easily, if all these quarterbacks are going off the table like you think,
they will.
Then they could still easily pick up Malik Nabers.
Yeah, but man, lately I've been seeing Nabers drop a lot. Apparently, there's something that he has locker room problems, allegedly.
Oh.
That's all I'm saying is allegedly.
He has locker room problems, but nobody showed up to Caleb Williams' birthday.
Is that a thing?
No.
Or just making still a reference?
Draft day reference.
I was saying, is that just still a draft day reference?
No. I don't like Caleb Williams. I not only am hoping he's as big of a bust as I believe, but I am actively going for that bust.
I think that he's going to be career-wise a bust. I don't think he's going to be the next greatest thing. They call him a generational player. They call him the closest thing to Mahomes since Mahomes. And I'm sitting here like, I don't see it. I think Caleb Williams has a nice long ball. It looks good, I suppose.
I've never seen a quarterback in the NCAA that has had no real winning, no drive to win. Become a top-tier NFL caliber quarterback. In my opinion, if you've ever watched USC games, he's good. The drive to win. You know what I'm talking about? Like that, okay, I need us to win. I want us to win. So it has to happen. That eyeball test, like, oh, he wants this win. I've never seen that. Not one time. Patrick Mahomes has that all the time. You go back, look at Tennessee games where Peyton Manning was playing. He won. Yeah. What, did he ever win a national championship with Tennessee? No. But the drive to win was there. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, but I don't. I see more of Patrick Mahomes and Caleb Williams at the college level being the same player of, I'm just going to air the ball out and try to make big plays. Because Patrick Mahomes didn't have a lot of winning success in college. He had a lot of stats and numbers because Texas Tech's air raid offense It was throw the ball 90, fuck, I'm exaggerating, 90 times a game.
It would be a lot. It could have been up there.
But, you know, they're just an air raid offense. And I think they both throw good balls. I think Caleb Williams throws a good ball. But I think the transition for him to the NFL is just, I think he's going to crumble. I think he's going to struggle. And I don't think he has the mental aptitude to deal with it. I don't think he knows how to deal with failure the way that he cried in his mom's arms after becoming bowl ineligible after losing that game. I don't think that he has the mental capability to handle that. And that would be detrimental to a number one overall pick. Because how many times do we see a number one overall quarterback get drafted and have success? Very rarely does a quarterback go number one overall and have success in the NFL instantly. The last quarterback to do that, Andrew Luck. He took the Colts from a 3-win team to an 11-win team overnight. That's how good Andrew Luck was. Do I think Caleb Williams is that? Fucking absolutely not.
Caleb Williams, listen, how good was Chicago last year? 8 wins?
I don't recall.
So
I don't even think it was 8 wins.
I don't remember, but they had a chance to make the playoffs still at the end of the year. I know that for sure. And you add on better talent now on the line. I'm not saying exponentially better, but you know, 7 whatever. Wins. They gained wide receiver talent. They have just as good of a running back as they've ever had. And you add him in there, sure, they might get a couple extra wins. But is 2 extra wins worth the first overall pick? No. That's all I'm saying.
I agree. I think if they were going to do this, they should have rode with Justin Fields, made the same moves, and then
drafted
another either stud of an offensive lineman at 9 and at the number one overall pick, trade back and maybe get a wide receiver and an extra pick.
That's why they're, in my opinion, the only reason to get rid of Justin Fields and go with Caleb Williams in this situation, especially when you had 2 first overall picks, is because in 3 years or 4 years, you'll have to pay Caleb Williams. And in like a year, you'll have to pay Justin Fields. So I would have personally, if you wanted Super Bowl as soon as possible for Chicago, you would have kept Justin Fields, you would have drafted Marvin Harrison, and then you would have drafted a top-tier defensive player or a top-tier tackle, and you would have walked into the playoffs easily. Now,
no, not so much. I don't think they would, because they still have to beat Detroit, who played very well last year. The Packers came on late and played very well at the end of the season. The Vikings, 50-50. We'll see what kind of happens with them. No,
stop.
They put up 7 wins with little Bill, okay? But
Vikings are in a full rebuild.
I want to ask you a question, then we can wrap up this episode. What do you think about all these players not at voluntary offseason workouts? And I'm going to specifically make it towards the Cowboys and CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons that say it's not, well, at least for Micah Parsons, it's not contract related. Micah Parsons, we know, has been on his podcast, which I don't know the name of, and, you know, pretty much criticizing the Cowboys and their culture and their lack of a winning culture. CeeDee Lamb, I believe, is holding out because of a contract dispute. What do you think about that and what that means for the Cowboys?
It's the same shit I've been saying all offseason.
Pay the man?
Cowboys ownership is literally in a, like, we'll wait and see what's going to happen after this year. Full scenario. And the players know that. And so, like, why would I show up for
OTAs?
OTAs when my ownership doesn't even believe in this team? Why should I believe in this team if my ownership doesn't believe in this team? And then, of course, like I've said earlier, the Jones family is known for putting out bad articles about players during contract talks. CeeDee Lamb, oh, he's not at OTAs. Let's put out a bunch of articles about how CeeDee Lamb's a lazy douchebag player. Whatever.
No, this is being reported by
I'm sure it is.
It's all over ESPN.
And then also, all the reports about how Cowboys front office and Cowboys staff are so tired of Micah Parsons and his antics. Shut up. You take one of the best NFL players, they can do just about anything they want to in the locker room.
Wrong.
And it's all bullcrap anyway. No, there was no talks about Micah Parsons being annoying to staff and ownership when he was in his first 3 years of his rookie deal. It just so happens a contract comes around. Oh, he's well, been
he also doesn't have to be on his podcast talking about his team's culture to the public. Like, that needs to stay inside the team facility.
Well, it's just like
Emmitt you don't bring shit outside of your team facility.
Emmitt Smith and Michael Irving were on a podcast not too long ago, and they said what I've been saying for a while, and it's the players just don't want it enough. And that is a culture. If you make a culture of people that need it, as one of our favorite quotes in Any Given Sunday is, you fight for that inch. You need that inch. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're trying to say. Yes.
That is not a culture the Cowboys have. They don't need it. They want it, but they don't need it.
I don't even think they want it because, quote unquote, we're all in by your owner, GM.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Yeah.
If
this is what all in looks like, fuck.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If your ownership doesn't need it either, then you're not going to need it. It's just a lack of championship mentality.
Well, I just wanted to get your opinion on that. Obviously, there's other players not at team OTAs. Zach Wilson's not at OTAs. I'm sure I haven't pulled it up, but I haven't got any notifications. I'm sure there's a couple Colts not at OTAs. And OTAs aren't really that big of a deal. You know, most of your big names still hold out.
If you told me, oh, they're like, not. Like
I'm sure Rodgers isn't at OTAs.
If you told me that these guys didn't show up to training camp, then I would be like, oh, shit.
And you know who is at OTAs? Deshaun Watson and Nick Chubb are at OTAs coming off their injuries. So look out for the Browns. Apparently, there was an article that was like, Watson is now throwing 40 yards after his injury. And
yay.
Chubb is allegedly running pretty well in OTAs after
Chubb's
his injury.
Chubb's running a 6'5", 40.
But anyways, I think that pretty much wraps it up. This was a fun episode. We went a little over time, but hopefully you guys enjoyed it. It was a fun talk. WNBA, which we rarely talk about, so enjoy that little bit of a segment.
Caleb Williams is a bum.
Would
Thursday
agree.
Will prove it.
Thursday won't prove it. It'll be the season.
No, he's not going number one overall. Trust me.